Yes, welcome everybody to today's colloquium. It's my pleasure to introduce Gil Yong-Cho. So Gil comes from Korea, literally. He arrived a couple of days ago. And he was a postdoc in the management bank until 2 years ago.
Yep.
Then he had to interrupt that to become a special research agent in the Korean army. And that's not a joke. So he's been doing his military service recently in the Korean Institute of Advanced Study. And today he will tell us about geometry in topological quantum matter and beyond.
Okay, thanks for the introductions. So today I'm going to talk about the geometry in the topological quantum matter and beyond. So I'm Gil Yong-cho from South Korea. So this is the plan for today's talk. So in the first part, I will start with brief introductions on the topological phases, and then I will move to the main part of the talk, which is the geometry in the quantum Hall systems. And then I will move to the something which is beyond the specific topic, geometry in the quantum Hall systems. I will finish by conclusions. So let's start with introductions. So the modern condensed matter physics is essentially a search for the emergent phenomena enabled by quantum mechanics and many-body physics. So when the quantum mechanics and many-body physics are all, when they are entangled, they give rise to interesting phenomena, like the quantum Hall effects or like the superconductors, non-Fermi leakage, spin leakage, et cetera. And I put some names from the Parameter Institute who contributed to the field a lot. So in today's talk, we are going to pay particular attention to the important classes of the phases, which is known as the topological phases, with a particular emphasis on the quantum Hall effects and the topological insulators. So before getting started, one can ask, why should I care topological phases? So, so first of all, some topological phases are known to support the non-abelian anions, which can be used in the quantum computations. And one of the research directions which became very famous these days is to find Majorana fermions. And it became so famous, it even appeared in the American TV show Big Bang Theory. So if you look at the whiteboard very carefully behind the shadows, then you see a scheme which is for the Majorana fermions. And the topological phases also can be used to generate the spin currents in the spintronic spaces, devices in the topological insulator materials. And surprisingly, they can be also used as a good thermoelectric materials in the fridge. So topological phases have a lot of potential applications. But for me, the most important reason to study it is that they are physically interesting phases matter. And they illustrate how much quantum phases can be different from classical counterparts. So there can be an example that I have like trivial insulator and the topological states, where they have the same symmetries. So according to the classical intuitions, like the Landau-Ginzburg theory, I cannot tell the difference between the two states. But if I apply the electric field to the phases, then in one side, the trivial state doesn't respond to you in any way. But in the topological state, they give rise sometimes the quantized responses. And the essential difference between two lies only in the topological structures of the wave functions. So the topological state is intrinsically quantum mechanical. And so there has been a lot of efforts in understanding these phases of matter to understand their physics. And some of the physics are very well understood by now. So the topological phases, the classical topological phases, has been known like tens of years by now. Like the in these classes of phases, did you see the laser pointer? Okay. So the in these phases of matters, only the global topology of space matter. So what people say is that classical topological phases cannot distinguish donut from cup, but it can distinguish from cup and spheres. But recently, what we are observing is that there is something beyond this strict topological limit. Like the topological crystalline insulators, where the crystalline symmetries play essential role in defining their topological characteristics. And the geometry in the quantum Hall effects that we are going to study in some depth is also an example. And surprisingly, entanglement spectrums for the topological phases can be also obtained by putting the system in an interesting space-time geometry, which is the accelerating frames. And if I have time, I will come back to this topic later. So For now, let's concentrate on the geometry in the topological phases, which can be best illustrated in the cornhole systems. And what we're going to see is that the seemingly independent themes, like the geometry, topological order, and anomaly, and spatial symmetries, are all entangled to give rise to interesting physics. So let's move to the main topic, which is geometry in the cornhole systems. So let's start with a brief review on the cornhole systems. So cornhole systems is essentially the system of the two-dimensional electron gas under the uniform magnetic field. So let's say I want to understand these systems, then what should I do? So first thing I probably try is to solve the classical mechanics, which is just Newtonian dynamics. So I'm just solving the classical electrons moving under the uniform electric field and uniform magnetic field, which will give rise, as we know, just cyclotron motions. That's something we learned in our undergraduate school. And if you solve it, then what you're going to find is an experiment. So what you're going to see is that in the experiment, what you're going to see is the striking deviations from the classical mechanics. So this is the whole resistivity, and this is the magnetic field. So what you see is in the small magnetic field limits, you see that the resistivity is linear in the magnetic field, which is correct to the which is constant with our semi-classical expectations. But if you increase the magnetic field, then you start to see that the whole resistivity deviates from the linear in the magnetic field behaviors. And those happens when you have the whole conductivity, which is the inverse of a whole resistivity, is quantized in the E squared divided by H, in the integers or by fractions, rational fractions. And when they are quantized in integer, it's called as integer Kolmogorov effect. And when they are quantized in the rational fractions, they are called as fractional Kolmogorov effect. Okay, so let me give you some summary for the information from the experiment. So what experiments tells you is that there is a Galton Schleiden state appearing at the filling, like Buick 1/3, where the filling is defined as following. So in the cornhole systems, we can count how many unit flux quorum in the systems, which is essentially H divided by E. And let's represent it as arrow and the electron as circle. Then the filling is just the ratio between the number of electrons and the number of arrows. And for example, the 1/3 state, which we are going to concentrate on the today's talk, is the state where I find one electron per three arrows. And according to the experiment, what you see is that this state has the whole conductivity, which is completely fixed by filling, which is just 1/3 times E squared divided by H, and sigma xx is 0, meaning that it's insulator. So we see that the classical intuition is breaking down. So you can ask, how do I understand these cornhole phases? So in the today's talk, what we are going to use is the composite boson theory, which turns out to be an extremely successful theory, as I will explain soon, and which can explain the integer Kolmogorov effect and fractional Kolmogorov effect in a unified fashion. So how does the composite boson theory describe the 1/3 filling state? So 1/3 state is a state where you find one electron per three arrows. So from the picture, it's very tempting to define this object as a new particles. So let's say I attach three flux quorum to the electron and then call it a new object, new particle. And it turns out that this particle has bosonic statistics, and so we call it composite bosons. And this flux attachment process is formally done by the Chern-Simons theory. And this process is known as the flux attachment. So we know that at the lowest temperatures, bosons, in the absence of the background magnetic field, will condense. So these bosons, composite bosons, after the flux attachment, will condense and become a superconductor. So essentially, the composite boson theory describes the fractional Kolmogorov effect of electron as a superconductor of the composite bosons. Okay, that's the physical picture of the composite boson theory. And then from this theory, you can actually derive some theory, which it turns out to be remarkably simple theory. So you have only two terms in the theory, and then two degrees of freedoms. One is just simply the electromagnetic gauge field, and the other is the field that parameterizes the electron current. And this is known as the effective Chern-Simons theory for the Kolmogorov effect. So why is it useful? So this theory is very successful in describing the ground state as well as the simple excitations in the Kolmogorov system. First of all, it gives you the correct electromagnetic response. So if you calculate the Hall conductivity from this theory, it gives you 1/3 E squared divided by H, which is what you expect from the experiment. And sigma XX turns out to be 0. So it's constant with the what you observe in the experiment. And it gives rise to correct fractional anionic excitations, which you expect from the wave functions, as well as the topological order. And it gives you the correct ground state wave functions, which is known as the Laughlin state. And this state is rotationally invariant, meaning that if I rotate the frame of the wave functions, it is invariant. So more remarkably, this theory is, as a classical action, is topological, meaning that it doesn't depend on the metric. So the fractional Kármán effect described by this transaminant theory essentially cannot distinguish the cup from donuts. And its topological order in this description is completely characterized by simply two numbers. One is the degeneracy on the torus, which is 3, and the Hall conductivity, which is 1/3. So this is the this is where the concept of the topological order emerged. So one can ask, okay, so I showed that the topological effective theory is successful in describing the Kármán state. So one can ask if this is truly the end of the story. And what I'm going to show is it's not, and something beyond the topological descriptions, which is the effective transaminant theory, is necessary in the nature, which is the geometry in the Kármán states, which is the physics of the Kármán states, not captured within the topological transaminant theory. So one motivation to think about the geometry in the Kármán system is the experimental finding of the anisotropic state, anisotropic fractional Kármán state in the nature. So what experimentalists actually found is that there is a state, fractional Kármán states, breaking the rotation symmetry at the filling 2+1/3, which is essentially 1/3 filling state. So in this state, what's found is the resistivity. This is the resistivity along x direction, and this is the resistivity along y directions. So these Kármán states somehow distinguish x direction and y directions, meaning that this Kármán fluid can distinguish x direction and y directions, so the wave function is no longer rotationally invariant, which we expect for the Laughlin state. So when I saw this, I immediately noticed that it does not fit into the paradigm of the Laughlin states and its topological field theory. And so my claim is, to describe this state nicely, I need a new ingredient, which is geometry. More precisely, what I mean is, I claim, basically, this anisotropic Kármán state is described by the electrons coupled to the metric, which is deformed away from the flat isotropic one by some anisotropy order parameters. And this means that this anisotropic Kármán effect, effectively, the isotropic Kármán effect on the curved space, whose effective theory is not known much. So now the question is, how do I describe the Kármán systems on the curved space? And more importantly, the more important question is that Kármán wave functions, is it going to see these background geometry at all? Yeah?
Gil, what was the motivation to have a metric in the first place? Why was the metric not isotropic?
So in these systems, I deformed, so I will show later how this comes out.
But is this a material that...
Yeah, this is the material which is described by the metric which is deformed away. But there is another way to phrase it. So this metric is essential to capture some universal responses of the Kármán fluid, which you need to identify the wave function of the Kármán hole, even in the isotropic flat space. That I will come back to later. So before us, there was apparently some people who were thinking about the geometric responses of the Kármán effect. And actually, there are a lot of people discussing about the geometric responses of the Kármán fluid. And so there were some studies, but those studies are in the different context. And the knowledge obtained from them is like fractured and known piece by piece. So can I take off the, it's really hot here. It's okay. So basically there were some people discussing about the geometric responses of the Kármán fluid. And there are some known responses which are known from different context. And those are like the Wenzi term and the Hall viscosities. So to start with, let's start review what people have established about the geometric responses of the Kármán fluid, which is, let's start with Wenzel term. So Wenzel term essentially tells you that the Kármán fluid sees the background curvature as the magnetic flux. So remember that the Kármán fluid collects the electric charge at the magnetic flux. How do I know? So let's imagine the cylindrical geometry, and I fill the cylinder by the Kármán fluid. And then what I do is I turn on the magnetic flux at the center of the cylinder. And what you are going to see is that there is some EMF effect, so there will be some electric field circulating around the cylinders. And because of the Hall conductivity, the currents will flow perpendicular to the direction of the electric field, and this means that the electric current will go to the center of the cylinder. And so the Kármán fluid will accumulate the electric charge at the magnetic flux. So let's compare this with the situations on the space with the curvature, like the sphere or the conical singularities, known as the disclinations in the condensed matter context. So what's known from the Kármán wave function study is that these wave functions collect or deplete the charge depending on the curvatures. So when and z to account this effect seen from the wave function, to account this effect, they supplemented a phenomenological term into the effective theory, which is the last term here. And the last term here shows one term, which is spin connections, which describes the background scalar curvature, where the local curvature is given by curve omega. This is similar to the magnetic field, where B is curve A. Okay? And here, the coupling constant is known as the spin or shift. And this turns out to be one of the most important characteristics of the topological orders that we'll come back to it later. And from the couplings between the current and the gauge field and spin connections, you see that the gauge field and spin connections couple to the current in the identical fashions. This means that the curvature, scalar curvature, will collect the electric charge as like the magnetic field collect the electric charge in the Kármán effect. So essentially this term, when you add to the actions, it captures what people saw in the wave functions. But there has been no derivations for these terms, and this term remained phenomenological so far. Okay?
Here, this J is dB?
J is dB divided by 2 pi, yes. And the other response is the Hall viscosity. So Hall viscosity essentially tells you that there is a force perpendicular to the direction of the fluid. So let's think about the conventional fluid like the water, and then let's put the cylinder and then make it rotating. Then what you are going to see is that there is a force, frictional force, which is anti-parallel to the direction of the motions, which will impede the motion of the fluid. And that will eventually stop the motion of the cylinders. But let's do it in the Kármán fluid. Then what you are going to see is actually what's known from the hydrodynamic theory is that there will be some force which is perpendicular to the direction of the motions, giving rise to the dissipationless process. And this is known as the Hall viscosity. And this response actually can be written as an effective theory. And based on the phenomenologies you are seeing from the previous slide, which can be written as this way, where you see that low bar is just density of the fluid. And S is the spin or shift you saw in the Wenzel term. And the omega t is just time component of the spin connections. So this term, even though you can write down as an effective theory, there has been no field theoretic derivations. So it's not clear where it comes from, or like how do you derive it.
Why is S the same?
That's the question that I will answer in this talk. Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice question. So you see that there are some parallel things between two, right? There is S and omegas. So both terms contain spin connections and spin or shift. That means both terms may originate from the same physics. And so the other thing is both terms has been known mainly from the ideal wave function studies, and they have been claimed to be protected from the wave function studies, even though it's not a priori very clear why those values should be protected. And these responses are known piece by piece, not in a unified fashion. Yeah?
So in point one,
yeah.
So this is component of omega in space?
Yeah. The first one, so what is the question? Sorry.
So the spin connection is valued in rotations, right?
Yeah.
So which component are you picking of those? I mean here. It makes sense for that, for that expression.
You mean here or here?
Yes, the point one.
Point one.
Yes.
So this one involves the order components, zero, x, y. And omega zero, you might ask, what is omega zero? It's actually the pure torsions.
No, no, but yeah. Omega isn't the spin connection. It's not just a vector, right?
Oh, okay. So it's a non-relativistic system. So it's a non-relativistic system.
So you pick the component of the. So I thought that is written relative in a way that looks relativistic. Is not.
Relativistic. It's not relativistic. Okay. It is more like omega x y component.
That's
in
right.
The yeah yeah.
You get it in a different form before. You had omega mu j mu.
Omega mu j mu, yes.
Yeah, so
j mu was the 2 pi over b mu d, so
curl.
D, yeah, curl b, yes.
Why did you write it in a different form here?
I should have written as j mu, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it would look more similar.
I didn't expect the reader audiences are this austere. Okay, so let me go on. So, any other questions? Okay, that's very nice. So essentially, there is no derivations. That's partially the reason why we don't have unified understandings for these responses. Okay. So given,
is that all the zero component of J, or is it completely independent?
It's completely independent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm. Yeah. Questions?
No.
Okay. So given the situations, like you see that the physically clear and unified descriptions of geometric responses is desired, right? And so given the situations, you can ask, can I probably derive these geometric responses using the composite particle theories in a unified fashion? Because the composite particle theories we saw is extremely successful in capturing the properties of the ground state wave functions and the like whole conductivities, et cetera. So you can try to search in the Google if the composite particle theories has ever been used to derive these responses. You will see nothing except our papers. The reason is that the naive applications completely fail. So you need to do something more careful. So to see why it fails, let's go through the naive composite boson theories. So remember that the composite boson theory, using the flux attachment, I attach 3 flux quorum to the electron and redefine it as the composite boson. And then I put it into the superconductor phase, which will describe the fractional chromal effect of the electrons. So let's go through. So the problem is electrons under the uniform magnetic field, where the A mu has the average part plus the probe part. The probe field will give you the response to the electric field, and this uniform piece will give you rise the uniform magnetic field on the space. So this one is more like the constant field. And to go through the composite boson series, I need to attach 3 flux quorum to the electrons and turn to the composite bosons, and that's done by the Chern-Simons term, whose coefficient is chosen carefully to attach 3 flux quorum to the electrons to turn it to the composite bosons. So some high energy physicists might be allegorically doesn't like this one, but you should think of it as the shorthand writings of the properly quantized Chern-Simons terms. And the composite boson is now coupled with the background gauge field as well as the Chern-Simons gauge field. And then we are saying that the background uniform magnetic field is completely canceled by the internal Chern-Simons gauge field, which is equivalent to say that the composite boson is moving in the absence of the background magnetic field. Okay?
So A here is dynamical?
This small a is dynamical, but I decomposed it to the A bar plus delta A. So it's more like the mean field choices where the delta A bar cancels background uniform magnetic field. So delta A, so A is dynamical, yes. Capital A is not dynamical, it's background field.
So and psi is describing now something
here?
Does it still stand for the electron, or does it stand for this composite boson? Now?
So now this one is composite boson, this one is the electron.
So it's, even if it's the same symbol, is it different?
Yeah, so you shouldn't be tilde or something like that. Yeah. So after these transformations, this one is composite bosons. And you see that I started with the problem of electrons under the uniform magnetic field. I ended up with the problem of bosons coupled to the fluctuating gauge field, coupled only to the probe electromagnetic gauge field. And then I condensed the bosons, meaning that bosons developed the vacuum expectation values. So this means that I can write the bosons in terms of its amplitude and phase, which is in non-zero. And I can plug it this to here, and then perform the like standard boson vortex dualities and some gradient expansions, which you can find from your field theory textbook. Then you find this. So there are more terms, but those are irrelevant. So the leading term is just three, so which looks a little complicated, but let's go on. So the first term is simply the charging energies. So remember that I have finite density of charge. So if I apply the voltage drop, which is delta is zero, then you need to pay some energies. That's the first term. And the second term is, which looks a little complicated than that, but it is just the coupling between the composite boson current to the gauge field, where the current is parameterized in terms of the dual field, B. And the last term is just the remnant of the transcendence gauge theory. And then to proceed further, I integrate out delta A, and I expand the metric around the flat isotropic one, which I'm interested in. I'm the condensed matter theorist, so I expand around the flat isotropic one. Then you find this theory, which is topological transcendence theory, which describes the degeneracies on the torus as well as the Hall conductivities. But you see that there's no Hall viscosities, no Wannsee terms, no spin connection at all, which we know the property of the quantum Hall fluid on the curved space. So does it mean that the composite boson theory failed to capture the geometric responses of the quantum Hall fluid? This should be very strange, right? Because the composite particle theories made extreme success in describing the ground state. And I can even derive the wave functions, ground wave functions, from these composite particle theories, which is used to derive the geometric response. So it's strange that the composite particle theory failed to capture the geometric responses. And somehow it fails only to capture the two geometric responses. That's strange, right? So it captures every other properties, but somehow it misses only two. That's strange, yeah.
Can I think about this boson flux attachment? I mean, is it sort of a non-relativistic version of the fermion boson duality?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in the duality, so one has to add the ground couplings to the metric.
So it's only epsilons. So it's just transcendence terms.
Simons.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nothing.
It's nothing. Yeah.
To do with this.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can ask if it only fails to capture the geometric responses. That's strange. So. And on the other hand, it's very subtle. It's really hard to pinpoint where things went wrong in the previous derivations. So the only point that things can go wrong is the starting point, which is the flux attachment. So I revisit the flux attachment and what's going to happen if I in the curved space. So I essentially ask if the flux attachment changes only the statistics from fermion to bosons, or does it induce something more, like the coupling to the background geometries, which is known as spin. Okay, is there any questions? So let's start with the flux attachment in the curved space. So I'm the condensed matter theorist, meaning that the time is absolute, and I have only space. So and then I introduce a particle, and then let it move along the space and time to see if there is corrections from the background curvature to the amplitude for the particle to propagate. And then I let the particle to couple with the transcendence gauge field so that this flux, so that this particle is now dressed with the flux, okay? And I now calculate the amplitude for the particle to propagate, and there are two contributions. One is known as the linking number, and the other is known as torsions. So linking number is essentially accounting for the anionic statistics in the quantum Hall fluid. And the torsion is something we are concentrating on. So now let's look at what is torsions. So torsions, so if I have particle propagating in the space-time, so at any point in the curve, you can introduce the normal vector and the tangent vectors. And then what's happening is when the particle propagates along the curve, normal vector rotates, okay? And the torsion essentially counts how much the normal vector rotates along the curve. So for the condensed matter theorist, one can ask what this normal vector means. So actually, it means it can be thought as the vector connecting the particle to the flux attached by the transamus terms. So remember that the flux and particles cannot sit at the same point, but they are splitted a little bit. So the vector connecting them can be thought as the normal vector. And the torsion essentially counts how much the flux and particles each other rotate along the curve. Okay? And after some algebras, what I can show is this torsion can be written completely in terms of the spin connections or the background geometry. So the torsion knows the background geometry through the spin connections.
Just a question. So in the definition of the torsion, space and time were treated
different
in a symmetric way.
Yeah.
In the different way or the same way?
It should be taken as space and time.
Right.
So this one runs over T, X, Y.
So the first line looks relativistic.
Yeah.
But now you are using...
Okay, that's cute. So so in the middle, what I did is... Okay, so there is something I didn't tell you. So when I derive that, I take the limit where the speed of light is something like infinity. So I did some adiabatic approximations in the middle. And that's where things can, But in the condensed matter theory, it makes sense.
So this is the no relativistic limit for the first expression.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
That's very nice. I mean, for me, it took like several months to figure that out, and you figure out in like several minutes. That's amazing.
That's
okay. So anyway, so let's plug it back to the amplitude for the particle to propagate along the curve. And what you will find is that there is a linking number, and there's corrections coming from the background geometry. And the coefficient is completely fixed by the level of the transamus theory I introduced. And this means that the particle, composite particle, will see the background geometry, which will minimally couple to the spin connections now. And this is the piece which has been missing from the 1992, from the Wen and Zhi's original paper. And what I'm going to show is this is enough to derive the correct geometric responses. So what I have shown you is that flux attachment accompanies induced spin to the composite particle. And the induced spin is determined by the number of flux you attach to the particle. So when you attach n fluxes, then the induced spin is n over 2, which is constant with the spin statistics connections, actually. And the induced spin of the composite particle couples to the spin connections of the background geometries, meaning that the covariant derivative now has the piece coming from the background spin connections. Now, let's see what it does to the composite boson series. So this one is old, wrong covariant derivative people use. And using that from the composite boson theory, I derived this, which is the topological transamus theory. Now I would like to use the correct covariant derivatives, which has the induced spin by the flux attachment. And now when you compare this one to that, you see that the only difference is A plus omega here, and here I have only A. So what I do to get the correct answer is simply shift A here by A plus omega. That's what I get. So now I get like 5 terms instead of 3. So we have the terms which appeared before, which is charging energies and topological transamus terms, which cares about the Hoare conductivities and degeneracies on the torus. Now we have 2 more terms, which are actually turned out to be the correct Hoare viscosity and correct Wen Zhi term. Okay, so I essentially showed you how to derive the Hoare viscosity and Wen Zhi term in a unified fashion. And before getting into other things, I would like to comment that it can be generalized to any abelian fractional conformal states, not only the one-third state. So I now provide you the complete field theoretic understandings for the abelian conformal states. And I can investigate, so the field theory, I have field theory, so I can investigate the effect of perturbations, like the dense-density interactions, and if they change the Hoare viscosity or Wen Zhi terms. And what you are going to find is these perturbations do not change these terms, meaning that it supports the previous claim that those are protected. Even though I cannot prove it within this side, but at least within the perturbations I consider, I can show they are protected. So some astute audience might ask if I'm missing the gravitational transamus terms. which is something I didn't tell you before, but this is another geometric response, which is essentially the transcendental term for the spin connections, whose coefficient is known as the chiral central charge on the edge theory of the Kolmogorov effect, which is manifested as the thermal hole conductivity. So this is really something physical. So do I miss it? It looks like I don't have such a term, right? So it turns out that the gravitational transcendental term appears in the effective response theory, meaning that if I write down the theory completely in terms of the background electromagnetic field and spin connections, then you see that there is a gravitational transcendental term, and the responses are completely fixed by three numbers: spin, filling, and chiral central charge. And so let's start with the effective field theory that I obtained, which is this. So if I compare this one and that, you notice that if I integrate out small b, then I should get that, right? Because this is the only degree of freedom, which is internal. So I want to integrate it out. But what you notice is that the theory is Gaussian in the gauge field. That means I can simply solve the equation of motion and plug it back. That's pretty simple. So everything is Gaussian, so it's very simple. Then what you will find is this. So let's compare with this one and that. You see that I correctly produce spin, 3/2, and the filling, but I'm missing the gravitational transcendental terms. So it's the composite boson theory failing again. So I fixed two problems, now I get another. So it doesn't mean that the composite boson theory is wrong. So what it actually turns out is that when I integrate out the gauge field, transcendental gauge field in the curved space-time, I need to be very careful. There is a correction coming from the background geometry, which is known as the framing anomaly, in the Witten's paper. So when I integrate out the transcendental theory in the space-time, I receive something like the gravitational transcendental terms. So let's include that. So if I integrate out the dynamical gauge field, then now I get this with the framing anomaly, which correctly reproduces the spin and the correct central charge now. So using the correct covariant derivatives and the framing anomalies, I can derive all the geometric responses free theoretically now using the composite boson series. So I can also show that there are like three flavors to describe the Kolmogorov fluid. One is composite boson, and the other is composite fermion, and there is a so-called project parton series. And they are all different methods, but it's known that they give rise to the same topological transcendental theory. And now what I can show is all these three methods give rise to the same correct geometric responses, only after including the correct covariant derivatives and framing anomalies. So using these, I can calculate all the geometric responses for all the known Kolmogorov fluid, like the abelians and non-abelians, including the parafermions and Pfaffians, etc. So before going further, let me comment on some aspects of my work. First of all, even though I discussed the geometric responses in the language of the Kolmogorov fluid, it should be noted that the result can be generalized to many other topological phases in 2D, including like spin liquids, which can be constructed by composite particle series and project parton method. Secondly, there has been some questions about the equivalence between the composite fermion and boson series, even though I didn't explain what composite fermion series. What's known is that they give rise to the same transcendental theory, which captures the topological degeneracies and the Hall conductivities. But it has been questions if they are actually same, beyond the these topological descriptions. And there was even conjectures or expectations that the composite fermion theory and composite boson theory are different at the topological phase transitions. But my work here supports that the composite fermion theory and composite boson theory seem to be equivalent beyond the topological descriptions, including the geometric response. And further supports, I can construct the further supports coming from the 2+1 dimensional fermion boson duality you mentioned near the topological phase transitions. And lastly, it comes back to Gouffre's questions. The spin and chiral central charge, I derived those in the language of geometric responses, but those are the important fingerprints of the two-dimensional topological phases. And these values are still interesting, even in the absence of the explicit geometric deformations. We'll come back to that in the when we discuss the composite fermion liquid. So in summary, I have shown that the naive approach of the composite particle series failed to reproduce the geometric responses. And so I have modified the flux attachment and transimer theory in the curved space. And with this, I can derive Wenzel term and Hall viscosities for any quorum Hall fluid. And I have used the framing anomaly to correctly capture the central charge as well as the gravitational transimer terms. And these results have been shown to be consistent with other approaches later using the like hydrodynamic theories or wave functions. So far, we have derived these geometric responses in the language of the quorum Hall fluid very nicely. Now the question is, as a condensed matter theorist, we have some systems where I can apply our knowledge. So we can ask, what do these geometric responses imply on the unspecified quorum Hall fluid, where the dynamical metric comes from the unspecified order parameters? And among the several physics, I will discuss only two predictions. So first one is about the quorum criticalities. So in the condensed matter language, the unspecified delta GXX and delta GXY comes from the electron-electron interactions like that. So I have psi squared with some coefficient, and V psi squared. So it's a four Fermion terms. And as a condensed matter theorist, when you see these type of interactions, what you do instantly is to perform the Hubbard-Strobich technique, where I decompose these interactions into the delta GXX, delta GXY with some squares. So you see that if V is attractive enough, what is going to happen is that delta GXX and delta GXY develop some finite expectation values, meaning that you are going to get into the unisotropic quorum Hall fluid. So to discuss the transitions from the isotropic to the unisotropic state, what you can imagine to do is to integrate out the fermions and write down effective series for the delta GXX and delta GXY. Naively, the quorum Hall fluid is gapped phase of matter. So if you integrate out the fermions, what you expect is this form of the theory, where you see that the time derivatives and space derivatives has the same numbers, meaning that the space and time will scale the same between the unisotropic and isotropic quorum Hall fluid. But when you have the geometric derivations I gave you, what you will find is that in the quorum fluid, there is a one term where I have one time derivative, which is actually the Hall viscosities. And Hall viscosity changes the criticality from z equal 1 to z equal 2, which is the scaling between the space and time. So Hall viscosities, it looks like it's just esoteric, artistic things, but actually it appears in the physics in a very drastic way. And another question you can ask is, given the transitions between the isotropic phase and non-isotropic phase, you can ask what topological order will the unisotropic phase have? Because I have isotropic phase, unisotropic phase, there is a quantum critical point. So it's not clear if the unisotropic phase will have the same topological order as the isotropic one. But what you can show following my derivation is that the unisotropic phase will have the same topological order as the isotropic quorum Hall fluid. And this means that this unisotropic quorum Hall fluid will have the same fractional excitations, which is one-third charge in the unisotropic phase, and the sigma xy should be quantized to be one-third, and resistivities should approach zero at the lowest temperature. So let's go back to experiment. So I said that resistivities should go to zero at the lowest temperatures, but what you are seeing is that one resistivity behaves very well, but the other is somehow shooting up as the temperature goes down. So where things go wrong? So this puzzled me for a while, but what we recently figured out is that in the unisotropic quorum Hall state, what could happen is because of the geometry, background geometry, and the boundary conditions, there can be some domain errors in the unisotropy order parameter. And these modes gives rise, these domain errors give rise additional one-dimensional conducting modes, which can experience the localization transitions at the low temperatures. And we believe this can explain this resistivity behavior at the low temperatures. So I have shown that the quorum Hall systems intertwine geometry with the topological orders, like the Hall viscosities, Wenzel term, gravitational transimer terms. And I derived the geometric responses from the field theoretic method, involved the fixing of the concept of flux attachment, framing anomaly, and geometric responses are essential in understanding the universal physics of the unisotropic quorum Hall fluid. So do you have questions about the previous sections? Otherwise, I will discuss the outlooks, which will be more speculative. Is it too boring?
No.
Sorry, maybe it's my tone. So I'm Korean, so Korean English is more like flat, and it might sound boring, but yeah.
So we're very focused.
Is this whole picture of the composite boson something that's restricted to the first Landau level, or mm-hmm. does it really apply at the higher Landau level?
Yes, it doesn't distinguish which Landau level we are talking about. So the composite boson theory applies every Landau level.
But do you get the non-isotropic behavior in the first Landau?
Only at the 2+1/3. That's coming from the details of the interactions between the electrons.
So the effective theory wouldn't tell you why that's happening?
No. It wouldn't tell you. So only the numerics can tell. Yeah. Like me, I don't know. But some numerical people, they know it will happen. Yeah. So there are some numerical works that shows the unisotropic conformal state may appear depending on the interactions. So, yeah.
So actually, I have one question.
Yeah.
So I wonder why the orbital spin is so universal. So naively, when I think about composite objects made of electron flux, I can imagine having different bound state with, say, different angular momentum.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow,
it shows it's very robust.
Yeah,
so that's why I said that I can check the stability within the perturbations that I have. So I don't see the good reason why it should be protected. So there are some arguments using the rotational symmetry in the space. So when you have like U1 rotational symmetries, then there are some arguments that spin must be protected to certain value. But that's using some wave functions. So in the field theory, I don't know. It is always allowed. So it's not clear why it should be like certain values, right? No. Yeah.
So that has to involve some energetic areas.
I guess so, yeah.
But somehow this, the cartoon you have somehow captures the
properties. Yeah, very nice properties of the quantum fluids that people see, yes. So one possible extension is to search for other strongly correlated systems where the geometry may be important. So strong interactions often lead to special symmetry breakings as well as the topological orders. Like in the Kármán fluid or like cuprates, we know that the strong correlations gives rise like the nematic phase, which is the phase breaking the rotations, or like stripes, crystals, CCWs, which breaks like translation symmetries. And we know that the strong correlation is essential in giving you the topologically ordered phase, like the quantum hole or the topological multi-insulator or spin linkages, etc. So in the presence of the strong correlations, it's natural to look for the interplay between the special symmetry and the topological order. But these kind of scenarios has not been much explored, and I believe the search for these could be interesting. And another extensions, which may be more important than previous one, is to extend to the gapless phase, which is the composite fermion liquid appearing at the half filling. So this is the experimental data where the conductivities are completely anisotropic at the filling, like 9/2, 11/2, etc. And you can ask for these gapless states, which is known as composite fermion liquid. You can ask if these states are going to have the quantized Hall viscosities or Ramsey terms like that, like the composite fermion, like the fractional quantum effect. But the issue is that the quantum field theoretic derivations for these states are not known much. One of the one reason for these complications is that right now, we have two different field theoretic descriptions for the composite fermion liquid half filling, which is one of the most hotly debated topics these days. One description is the Hartmann-Lee-Reed descriptions, which dates back to like 93s. It's just finite density of electrons coupled to the transamine terms. And this made some success in explaining the experiments and so on. And there is a more recent one, which is the Sohn's descriptions, which is essentially the Dirac fermions at the finite chemical potentials coupled to the gauge field. And this one is just derived, like 2015, so it's pretty new. Right now, the issue as a condensed matter theorist is that it is not clear which one is more correct. Even though they look completely different, but it's not very clear which one is more correct. And we are not sure if they are actually different or same. because the two discussions seem to agree in many observables, except the spin, except the whole viscosity, essentially. So for the hyperlinearly read descriptions, we calculated the spin. So if I attach two flux, so in the one half fillings, what I do is I attach two fluxes to the electron. That gives you the spin one. And then you can ask if the spin will receive the corrections from the gauge fluctuations. And actually, it gives rise to some corrections, which is non-universal. So in the hyperlinearly read descriptions, the spin seems to be some arbitrary number, which doesn't depend on any some specific informations. But in the Swan's descriptions, based on the symmetry argument, it is claimed that it should be half, protected by particle symmetry, even though it's not very clear how to calculate it from this. So you see that these two descriptions are clearly different for the spins and the whole viscosities. So I believe that figuring out what is correct spin for this half-field state will be will play a very decisive role in identifying the relation between the two series and which one is more correct. This is something I'm actively working on these days. And so if you don't have questions, I would like to move to some topic which is much beyond the geometry. Do you have any questions? Yeah.
On the previous slide, yeah. There's no reason for S to be quantized.
Here.
Because you say it plus this correction.
Yeah.
So it seems like we can have any continuum.
Yeah, it depends on the cutoff in the theory, yes.
So S does not have to be an integer?
I'm sorry?
S does not have to be half integer?
No. So it's a gapless system, so there is no apparent way to have protected values. But in the half-filling case, according to the Swan's descriptions, somehow it is claimed that it should be protected to be half.
How is S defined in the gapless system?
Here?
Yes.
So there are many different ways. But here, what they use is, so remember that the whole viscosity is just the coming from the shearing of the systems. Mm-hmm. So what they did is you apply the electric field at the finite momentum. That will shear the systems in some periodic way. And then you can ask what is the response of the fluid, which is sigma xy q. And sigma xy, the whole conductivity at the finite momentum q, follows certain properties under the particle symmetries. And then following the symmetries, they can show that it should be half. By the way, this one has the particle symmetry, sorry, that I should have mentioned that at the beginning. But so there are some symmetries you expect to have at the half filling, and then that's how they derived it. But it's not very clear how to calculate it from here by introducing spin connections and so on. Yeah.
Contrasting composite fermion and composite boson approach,
mm-hmm.
this spontaneous pneumaticity that develops experimentally, there is something natural in terms of composite fermion picture. Because yes,
that's true.
The surface can undergo power range of instability.
Yeah, that's true.
What is the corresponding thing in the composite boson?
So inside the composite bosons, you can also think about the condensate has certain angular momentums which shears the system, right? So we can discuss after the talk, but it's not very difficult. So bosons can have angular momentums, and then it can condense to the angular momentums, which will break the rotation symmetries. Yeah. So any other questions? Otherwise, I would like to move to the last section, which is beyond. So I already over the time, but this one will be 3 minutes to 4 minutes. So now I would like to slightly sit away from the geometry and have a broader view. So when you slightly sit away from the geometry, you clearly see a much bigger picture. So in the quantum phases matter, you have two broad classes of the phases. One is gapped phases, and the other is, of course, gapless states, right? And so far, we have concentrated on the topological phases, which is subclass of gapped phases. And we established a lot about this phase, like the anomalies and the interplay with the symmetries, entanglement properties, and interplay of geometries, and et cetera. So we established a lot. But one might question that the knowledge we developed may be restricted within here, and it might go nowhere. But what I'm trying to say here is it's not true. So what we develop here has actually a very big implications on the gapless states, like the quantum critical states or the composite fermion case. And so one can ask how this could happen. So in the topological phases, there are natural gapless states near the topological phases. So there are at least two obvious metallic states you can think of near the topological phases. One is the surface state of the topological insulators. For example, if I have a three-dimensional topological insulator, then on the surface, I have Dirac fermions, which suffers from parity anomalies, and which is protected by time reversal and the charge conservations. So it's gapless, symmetric, protected, and anomalous. And the other gapless state you can think of is a topological phase transitions out of the topological phases. So let's say I have two topological phases which are connected by continuous quantum critical points. Then you can perhaps expect that these quantum critical points knows about the informations of these topological phases. For example, the transitions from the integer quantum Hall effect to the trivial insulators has the parity anomaly to be half. So why should I care? Why should I care the gapless phase near the topological phases? So in some cases, the gapless states near the topological phases have the same anomaly and symmetry as the conventional metallic states you might find somewhere else. Then, according to the anomaly matching ideas and symmetry arguments, this could probably mean that they may be dual or the same theory. So the best example that works this way is the Sohn's theory for the composite fermion liquid at the half filling, which has the sigma xy half, which matches the parity anomaly of the surface of the topological insulator. Even though the precise matching requires the like fermion-fermion dualities, but this can be already seen from the sigma xy. And as I said, the integer quantum Hall transition has the same sigma xy and same symmetry as the half-filled composite fermion liquid. And actually, what you can show is that this composite fermion liquid can emerge from the integer quantum Hall transitions too. And so far, these kind of like identifications has been played by dualities like fermion-fermion duality that I briefly mentioned. But there are a broader set of the conjectured 2 plus 1 dimensional dualities. And some of these theories may be relevant for the condensed matter theorists, like on the surface of the fractional topological insulators or some fractional quantum Hall transitions, et cetera. So they may be relevant in the condensed matter systems too. For example, according to that line of the thinkings, like anomaly and symmetry and dualities, I also have shown to derive the effective theory for the composite fermion liquid at the filling 1 over 2n. Which is beyond the composite fermion liquid at the half fillings. So I derived these theories from the surface of fractional topological insulators and fractional quantum Hall transitions, which is sourced from exactly the same sigma xy. And I should mention that the effective theory is not clear how to derive, but this one I gave the talk like a month ago. Anyway, so what we are observing these days is that from which we understand relatively well, which is topological phases, we now have some implications on the much broader sets of the phases, something we don't know. So there are a lot of questions you can ask about these line of thinkings. So like what kind of gapless states can I study along this line? Or like how far I can learn about these phases matters. But without answering these, at least what I want to say is this signals that the knowledge from the topological phases is not localized within the topological phases, but it has a much bigger impact on the general quantum matters. And so we need more understandings of the topological phases, and I would like you to join to my research lines. So this is conclusions, and thank you.
Okay, we have some time for questions.
So probably my talk was too boring.
I have a question about the, you talked about this metric, GIJ there.
Yes.
Is there a way to kind of go a bit backtrack and understand where it comes from the fundamental interactions of electrons? Is there, you know, how would you describe it? What kind of operator it corresponds to?
So what kind of interactions I should have to give rise to the anisotropies?
Yeah,
what
is the geometry of the quantum Hall state that somehow makes sure that
yes.
There's some kind of metric and geometry which
yeah.
you can explain.
So you see that it's very naive condensed Mohr boson of the metric. So metric has two indices, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that means I need probably two indices things, which is naturally involved in the like angular momentum two channel over some interactions. Was it too naive? Okay, I'll show the interactions
okay.
precisely. So this is the interaction we want. So this one is metric deformation, right? So probably the interaction involves full fermions, right? That means I probably want to have a square of that. And it comes from the like the Hubbard-Strubitz techniques. So that's the interaction we need to derive the anisotropies. And that's the deformations we want.
So okay, so you're saying this is the this is the upper Stanojevich field.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a picture at the electronic level, like in you know in the original
electronic level?
Or this is that already an effective description?
Yes, this one is more like the effective description. So in the on the lattices, if you ask about the lattices, it's more like the sharing or like extending to the lattices along some directions. So when the let's imagine a like scale lattice, then the electrons will hop along x and y in the same way. But let's say somehow y direction is increased, then electron will hop less along the y directions, but it will hop along more x directions, right? Mm-hmm. That will give rise the mass along x directions is smaller and the y direction is larger, which is captured by this delta gxx. Yeah.
So when you interpret it as a Bose Stratonovich field, you should integrate over it in some sense.
Yeah, so there is a square.
So it's dynamical.
Yeah, it's dynamical, yes.
But in your discussion, you were treating it
it was background, but here it's dynamical. So I need to be a bit more careful. That's why so I have these kind of terms, right? So I have a scale. So I have kinetic terms for delta gxx and time derivative for the delta gxx too. Yeah.
And it condenses, right?
Yeah, it condenses in the anisotropic phase, yes. Yes?
So the way I understand the composite boson story in the normal way, the non-geometrical way of thinking about it, the existence of the plateaus is a very nice picture.
Mm-hmm.
You understand that as you dial the magnetic field, eventually you're canceling the statistic structures, and then when you cancel them, then the boson can condense because it doesn't see a field, basically.
Yes.
When you put your spin connection in, does that mean if I put the quantum Hall system on some sort of a, say, higher genus surface that has curvature, and I shrink it, so I make the curvature attractive?
Yeah, then there will be some excitations floating around.
But will there be plateaus in the same sense that if I think as a function of the radius of the...
So if you have less electron, then it will form that plateau, right? At the sigma xy to be one third, something like that. But you have less numbers, which comes from the curvatures of the background geometry. So like on the sphere, I can put the like 6 pi fluxes over the monopole. Then you expect to have 2 electrons floating around on the sphere, right? At the one third filling. But what's actually happening is there are some electrons you need to subtract out because of the curvatures. But the leftover electrons will form the plateaus.
Uh-huh.
They will be slightly shifted, but still it gives rise to the same phase of matter.
But when I'm wondering, so I'm not sure if that was specific to a sphere, or would that also be true if I did a higher genus? But then as I dial with the moduli of those geometries,
mm-hmm.
so the curvature is changing. Do I see anything, do I see the same kind of, if I track
So first of all, I don't know what is like the thing you said. So probably can you discuss?
So let's say we take a two-handled object and we just change the moduli of that object,
just
the size or something. It's like the radius of the sphere, but then the curvature will see that.
Yeah. Okay.
So then if I track one of the transport coefficients,
that will change. Yes.
So that will have the same kind of step.
Yeah, I think so. I believe so. So, but that kind of questions relies on the disorders, right? But here it's clean, so I'm not completely sure what will happen. But if everything is same and then you put the disorders, then I believe the same thing should happen there too.
Is there an experimental way to see that? Is that something?
It's hard to realize torus in the condensed matter experiment, right?
Experimentalists are gods, right? If you tell them it's worth doing it, they'll do it.
I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
The geometry that you emphasize becomes more transparent when you create a quasi-particle.
Yes.
So is there any measurable consequence of that? Suppose I create few Laplace quasi,
mm-hmm.
then can I make some local measurements?
Local measurement to see that? I believe there should be such experimental method if they realize sphere in the experiment with the monopole inside it. So it's hard to realize some systems with the curvature in the lattices in the experiment, right? So, so if I realize it, then probably there is a way to see it in the experiment, but.
But creating quasi-particles.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
By hand is equivalent to adding curvature, if I understand correctly.
No. No, they are, so curvatures might pull out the electrons on the plateaus, but that doesn't mean that the electrons outside of the plateau can be mapped to the curvature. That's different, right? So you go that way, but that doesn't mean that you go the other way. So you can apply the field to cancel the curvature too, but yeah. I'm sorry?
Who are you calling?
So I thought you were first, right?
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
So can I chair my session?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it seems like you've introduced a new effective field, this dynamical metric.
Yes.
Are there excitations of it, or are they some sort of physical effects?
Mm. You mean like that?
With its dynamics.
In quantum gravity.
Yeah. When I showed this to my higher energy physicist friend, they asked if I can realize a black hole, but I don't know. But I have one answer to your question. So when they condense, they will give rise to Gordon mode, which was not present before, which comes from the special symmetry breaking. Maybe it's too boring answer to your question.
Is it an observable
effect? Yeah, sure.
Is that a prediction of this?
Yeah. Yeah, we have that prediction in our paper, but yeah.
Yeah, so in the work, in the early work by Duncan Houghton, perhaps 5 years ago, actually he suggested there's an emergent geometry in fraction quantum Hall effect.
Mm-hmm. But that's different geometry, I think, but
yes,
anyway.
Yes,
yeah.
But there he suggests some different way for this explanation of the Wenzel term, the origin of the Wenzel term.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think in this emergent geometry picture, there's a very natural understanding for the quantization of the shift.
Okay.
So, yeah, in your approach, I'm still not quite understanding why this shift is quantized in your semi-classical approach.
So in the Huygens approach, I think it's based on more like the wave functions and the like, it's just k square divided by 2m, and then here look at the algebras, I think. So, but here I'm working with the effective field theories. So even though I don't have a good claim why it should be protected, I didn't say it must be protected, right? I never said that. So what I'm saying is effective field theories captures what's known from the wave function studies.
Yeah, but Houghton's wave function is beyond this usual transcendence theory.
It's wave functions, right? It's wave functions. So it's not field theory. It's wave functions.
Yeah, but there's an emergent geometry. That means
with the wave functions.
Dynamic geometry.
Yeah, with the wave functions, right? So we can discuss that after the talk.
But in your field approach, I don't see such kind of degree of freedom.
No, we have. So it's more like the attached the fluxes to the particles. So it deforms the so composite particles have some structures in it, which is almost like the, I think, the Huygens approach. But I don't have a good answer to the direct connections between the two approaches.
OK, this might be a good time to stop. And then you can ask Bill. He's here today and tomorrow.
Yes.
So please use time to ask more questions. Thank you.